This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The people with the least money often pay the highest prices. Journalist Mike Hudson has been investigating what he calls the poverty industry, the stores and finance companies that make big money by targeting the most economically vulnerable people, the poor and working class, as well as middle-class consumers who are unemployed and overwhelmed by bills. Hudson's article, Robin the Hood, was published in the August edition of Mother Jones. He edited a section on the poverty industry for Southern Exposure magazine. He describes the companies which make up the poverty industry as the new loan sharks.
They're not new in the sense that they haven't been here, but we're talking about pawn shops, check cashing outlets, rent-to-own furniture and television stores, finance companies. These are businesses that in one form or another have been around for a long time. But the key is that now they're multiplying in number, and now they're often are owned or by Wall Street companies or traded on Wall Street. There are many chains. There are several national chains of pawn shops.
Now say I want credit, and I've been turned down by banks. What is an example of a place that I could go to, but I'm going to end up paying a whole lot more interest?
Well, you could go to a pawn shop. You know, pawn loan works like this: you bring in some security, a television, whatever. Typically, they like jewelry because it's small and it can be stored easily. And so you've got a piece of jewelry worth a couple hundred dollars. They'll lend you $50, and then you come back the next month, and if you want to get it back, you pay $60. That's a 20% interest rate from one month to the next, but if you figure that out, that's an APR, annual percentage rate, of 240%. So if you borrowed $100 for a year, you're going to have to pay back $340 to get your merchandise back. You know, the other types of loans are finance company loans, which typically run 30% or more. In some states, South Carolina, for example, they can run more than 100%.
So say you get turned down by a mainstream bank for credit and you end up at a finance company. What are you likely to find there?
You're likely to pay for a small loan of $4,000 or $5,000 or $400 or $500. You're likely to pay as much as 30 to 35% annual interest rate. They're likely to try and sell you, sometimes without your knowledge, a lot of credit insurance to increase the loan value.
Well, what problem do you have with the high interest rates if, after all, these finance companies are taking a big risk by loaning money to people who aren't a very safe risk?
Well, the prices that are charged, the interest rates that are charged, I think often don't have that much to do with the degree of risk, but with the degree of desperation and the lack of financial sophistication of people. A lot of people don't understand, you know, about comparing annual percentage rates, or they just feel they don't have any choice. I don't think there's anything wrong with charging a little more to cover your risk for people who have less income or have poor credit histories, but when it gets to the point that the charges are piled on so high that people never get out of debt, that's when I think we have to question that and look at that and look at how these businesses are operating.
Let's get to check cashing stores. If you don't have a checking account, you often end up at a check cashing store. How do they work and where do they make their profit?
Well, typically you'll come in and say you have a check for $500, and they'll just take a percentage fee off the top to cash the check. They may charge as much as 10%. So for a $500 check, you'll go in, they'll cash the check and give you $450 and keep 50 as their fee.
Now, they're taking a risk on giving you the money, right, because you don't have an account that will cover the check if the check bounces.
Right.
Does 2 to 10% seem like too much to ask for to cover that risk?
Well, they did a study in Chicago of public welfare checks, and you know the interest rates. They found that well under a fraction of 1% of all the checks bounced had been stolen. So typically, check cashing outlets make a much higher return on their equity than banks, for example.
Why do you think somebody would go to a check cashing store that charges a 2 to 10% percentage of the check when they could go to a bank, open up a checking account, and just pay a pretty small fee to keep the checking mm-hmm. account going?
Part of it may be a transportation problem. There may not be a bank within 50 blocks, 20 blocks of their home. The check cashing outlet is on the corner. It's easy. Check cashing outlets often call themselves the 7-Elevens of banking because they're quick and they're easy. And some people, banks will not open checking accounts for them if they don't have enough money to start out with the account. Some banks will check your credit history, and if you have some bad marks on your credit history, they won't open an account for you. And of course, banks, minimum balance fees will add up. And a lot of people just don't look at it in the long term. If you're going to a check cashing outlet, you may pay $300, $400, $500 a year just for the privilege of cashing your check. Whereas even with when the minimum balance fees at a bank are pretty high, they're not going to run more than $100, $200 a year.
Journalist Mike Hudson is my guest. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. My guest is journalist Mike Hudson. He's written about the poverty industry for Mother Jones, Southern Exposure Magazine, and Washington Monthly. Another institution that you put in the category of the poverty industry is the rent-to-buy stores. Tell me how they work.
Rent-to-own stores typically pay $9.99 a week to buy a television. That doesn't sound like a lot, but it adds up.
You can rent it for $9.99 a week, and the money that you spend
goes towards ownership. And typically, right. After a year or 18 months, you own it.
Mm-hmm.
The one good thing about it is, if at any point during the transaction you decide you don't want it or you can't afford to pay anymore, you can bring it back without any further penalty. Unfortunately, though, you may have paid in for a television. You may have paid in for a $300 television. You may have paid $1,000. Over a year and lose your job or just run out of money and can't pay anymore, they're going to come get the television and you've lost all the money you've paid in. Typically, rent-to-own items are going to cost you about 3 to 4 times retail.
You trace these rent-to-own centers back to the 1960s, and you said they were designed to skirt certain laws that limited interest rates. What changed in the 60s that brought about this new kind of store?
A lot of state legislatures were passing laws to limit interest rates on retail credit stores charged by inner-city furniture and appliance dealers. There'd been a lot of activism in inner cities, kind of in tandem with the civil rights movement, to fight some of this price gouging. But soon after these laws went into effect, some store owners got the idea of skirting the interest rate limits by putting the items out as rent-to-own. And by defining them as rent-to-own, in most states, they can get around any sort of limits on what they can charge.
Because it's not an interest fee, it's a rental rate.
Right. And, there's some lawsuits over that question, but most state laws now define rent-to-own as a transaction that doesn't involve charging interest rates.
There have been a couple of class action suits in a couple of states against institutions that charge very high interest rates for money. What kinds of class action suits are starting to develop now?
A lot of the class action suits are accusing these companies of what's called reverse redlining. If redlining is where you won't lend money in these neighborhoods, then reverse lending is where you're lending money in these neighborhoods. You're targeting these neighborhoods for extremely high rates. Often, some of the community activists describe it as predatory lending. Fleet Financial Group, which is the largest bank in New England, earlier this year settled an attorney general's investigation and several class action lawsuits in Georgia for $115 million. The bank was accused of using its finance subsidiary to target 16,000 to 18,000 African-American bars for extremely high rates, and working with a lot of the shady 10 men and mortgage brokers.
Is there any proposed legislation to regulate the kind of institutions that you describe as the new loan sharks?
There's been some legislation on the state and federal level. A lot of the legislation has actually been written by the industries themselves in order to head off tighter regulation. The rent-to-own industry, for example, has been successful in getting an industry-written bill passed in about 30 states, which requires the industry to disclose things like the total price charged and whether the item is new or used, but it exempts rent-to-own transactions from state retail credit limits. There's federal legislation now that appears about to pass that will put some limits on high-interest mortgages in minority and low-income neighborhoods. One thing it does is it gives sort of a Surgeon General's warning for certain types of loans. There'll be a warning on there that basically says, you know, that this is a high-interest loan and you may be able to get a better interest rate elsewhere, and you may be in danger of losing your house if you cannot pay this.
What are some of the obstacles, if any, that you ran into in trying to research these institutions?
You know, one problem I had, and it just took a lot of, you know, a lot of work to overcome, was getting consumers to talk about themselves and talk about their, you know, their financial situations. It's hard, especially in America, where, you know, everyone is expected to have lots of money, and you watch television and, you know, the way to happiness is to buy more and own more and own a great car. So, and a lot of people who are poor or sort of on the borderline of poverty, I think there's a sense of shame. So they're afraid to come forward if they've been scammed by, say, a mortgage company. They don't want to talk about it.
Mike Hudson is a reporter with the Roanoke Times and World News. This is Fresh Air.